This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, on Sunday.
Whoa, dude.
What?
It's Saturday. We talked about this.
On Saturday, June 1st, Lincoln, Nebraska, Rainbow Comics, Cards, and Collectibles. Come join us at the Friendly Neighborhood Mini-Con.
Featuring local artists and comic creators, Omug Comics, Art of Lee Bachma, and Tank Zombie Studios.
All your favorite podcasts, Covert Nerd, Make Eternia Great Again, Daydream Instruction Manual.
June 1st at Rainbow Comics, Cards, and Collectibles. Doors open at 11 o'clock a.m.
With contests and door prizes. Oh yeah, did we mention free admission?
Rainbow Comics, Cards, and Collectibles, located at 1501 Pine Lake Road, Suite Number 17, Lincoln, Nebraska, 68512.
Rio Blast here, Eternia's only cowboy. This here free mini-con is brought to you in participation with your friends, the Last Starfighters Entertainment Group.
Mega, making Eternia great again!
I am Eddie, Prince of Daydream Destruction Manual and defender of the Podcast Arcade. This is Carl, my goat-kicking friend. Fabulous secret powers were revealed to me the day I held aloft my magic microphone and said, "By the power of podcasts, I have the power!"
I have the power too!
Carl became the mighty Goat Kicker, and I became E-Man, the most podcasting man in the universe! Only three others share this secret. Our friends, the Podcastress, Jeff at Arms, and Dorko. Together we defend the Podcast Arcade from the evil forces of boredom! Mega!
Welcome to Make Eternia Great Again. I'm your co-host, Eddie.
And I am Jeff.
And we are super lucky today.
We are. We're more than lucky.
This is crazy.
That's right.
Well, we're at Grand Comic Con.
Yep.
Yep. Second day.
Yep.
Day two.
Around good friends, family.
And you had a crazy turn of events. You had to meet someone at the airport.
Yes. I was blessed.
Tell us this real quick.
So I was given a text message and said, "Hey, there's a very special guest that needs a ride from Omaha to Grand Comic Con, and could you do it?" And I was like, "Who is it?" And they said, "It's a very, very, very special guest by the name of Andy Mengels."
Yes.
And I was like, "What?
Huh?
Are you serious?" I'm like, "I will be there now if he needs me." And they're like,
"Jeff,
sure."
Jeff pushed me out of the way. I was like, "Jeff, wait, you have my wallet." He's like, "No."
So I was like, "Yeah, let's do it." You know, so
yeah,
so I was like, "Cool."
So Andy Mengels is here
That's
with
right.
us today.
And then,
hey guys.
Yep. So it's so good to have you on our show, Andy. What do you think of the con so far?
It's been a fun con. You know, when you go to the, I'm used to going to San Diego Comic-Con down in San Diego for over 35 years. And so I'm used to like really enormous conventions.
Right.
But the smaller ones are fun because you get a little more time with the fans. And people ignore you a little less.
Right.
They actually pay attention to who's at what tables as opposed to, "Oh my God, I have to get over to this toy exclusive and stand in line for 4 hours."
Yep.
Which is what happens in San Diego.
Right.
That's crazy. So you're almost being bypassed for stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
In a weird way.
Right.
That's nuts.
I do Denver Comic-Con almost every year, and that one's kind of a mix between the two. It's almost as big as San Diego, but it's got the feel of this type of show.
That's awesome.
Where the fans actually do pay attention to you and so forth.
Good.
How fun. So you got to ride with this man.
Yes, and it was amazing.
All the way.
Brain. Just not to get too personal, but he was like, so while I was texting him, he was like, "I'm just letting you know I'm going to be kind of tired." I'm like, "Oh, that's cool.
That's fine. You don't need to be on.
You can sleep in the back. The seat reclines in my car. It's no big deal."
Right.
And we'll leave you alone and everything. He got in, started talking, and boom, we just had the greatest conversation I've ever
amazing.
Had in my life.
That's fun.
He slept on the airplane.
Yeah, he was just going to town. He's telling me everything. I've done this. I've done this. I'm like, "Oh, my gosh." And like, I'm like hitting my son's leg. I'm like, "Are you hearing this?" You
know? That's crazy.
It was great.
I called you out, though.
He did. He called me out. He was like, "You're a big Motu fan. How, you know, Who produced this box set?
Oh, dude, you're not the only one. He called me out. We hosted through...
We both failed.
Through Daydream. I didn't fail, though. I admitted that I didn't know. I wasn't like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I didn't know either.
I guess we both did fail. I'm trying to, like, own it. Like,
it's okay.
But, yeah,
it's
we were hosting the film Flash Gordon on the opening ceremonies for Grand Comic-Con and had the absolute pleasure of doing a post-film discussion, just chill with the crowd, and those are so fun, by the way. And you were there, and you were like laser focused on my eyes. I'm like, this guy's looking right at me, and he's like, tell me the connection between Flash Gordon and He-Man. And I'm like, oh no. And I'm like, did they inform? I'm sure they did borrow from it. Clearly, they did. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's very Flash Gordon inspired, but that was all I would really guess. And he's like, well, actually, I worked on it, and just boom, boom. I was like, he's so good. But it was fun. It was absolutely, it was playful and awesome. And if you don't mind, for people who are blissfully ignorant, please fill us in, listeners,
on
your time with Filmation and what you kind of how you got pulled into it.
Well, I have been a writer in the comic book world and comic book adjacent world for 35 years now.
Yeah, wow.
And have written for magazines about the intersection of comics and Hollywood.
Okay.
And that then transitioned in my career. Most of the comics that I've written have been Hollywood-based. Nightmare on Elm Street and Child's Play and Quantum Leap and Roswell and, you know, things like that. And once I started transitioning out of comics and started writing books, that followed. Star Wars and Star Trek and X-Files and things like that. And one of the books I did was called Animation on DVD, The Ultimate Guide. And it was a guide to several thousand animated DVDs and talked about what special features were on which and reviewed them and so forth. And there was a small company called BCI Eclipse. And they called me up one day. I had reviewed literally, they had one animated title out and I had reviewed that in the book. They called me up and they said, you seem to be the expert on this. You literally wrote the book. They said, we just got the rights to He-Man.
Oh.
And would you be interested in, could we pay you to come down to California and consult with us for a day about how to make the best He-Man sets possible for the fans?
Oh, my gosh.
And that was, number one, that's super rare that a company is looking to do the best thing possible for fans.
Right.
Right.
Usually it's what's best for our bottom line. What is the least we can put on and still sell this product? BCI Eclipse was like, what's the most we can put on?
Wow.
Man. And so they brought in myself and Val Staples, who you know from He-Man Comics.
Yep. Yeah.
And we sat there throughout the afternoon, and I walked out of there with a contract to produce all their He-Man sets, and when those were a success, then they decided to put out the rest of the Filmation library. So I was able to produce, I think, about 40 DVD sets for BCI Eclipse, all the Filmation library, the Hearst stuff, which was Defenders of the Earth, which is Flash Gordon and Phantom and so forth. And that led me to other companies where I did the same thing. I did Time Life, I did the Real Ghostbusters set. And I'm actually like I've done more work on Ghostbusters than most of the people who actually worked on Ghostbusters.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Because I produced the live action series set, the animated series from Filmation, and all the Real Ghostbusters sets. So
now, when you produce these, is it just you? Are you cracking your knuckles and going like, let's get this going, or do you assemble a team of people?
There's a team of people, and probably the most valuable to me was a guy named James Etok, who I think you probably know.
I know that name.
Yeah, he's written a couple books on He-Man.
Okay, yeah,
and he's from England. He puts out a magazine called Serial Geek.
That's I know that name.
And he's a big Motu guy. And he was kind of my right hand man and Val's right hand man, so he would be the, you know, whenever I had a question, he was the expert, and he'd help put together lists of questions for the interviews and you know, interesting factoids and things like that. Helped write the booklets. You know, when you're producing a DVD set of the type that we did for Motu and She-Ra and so forth, you can't get anything wrong or the fans will really notice.
Destroy them.
And it destroys any credibility that you actually know what you're talking about if you get even one detail wrong.
Oh, we know.
Yes.
And suddenly your credibility is right out the window. So, you know, in the 30 years I'd been working in the industry, I knew a lot of the people involved. who had worked for Filmation and other companies. And so I was able to kind of start pulling people in for interviews and commentary tracks and so forth. And then James was, on the flip side, was keeping me on track.
Right.
Making sure that every single thing we did was correct. And I'll freely admit that I'm not an expert on everything.
Well,
but
yeah.
part of the idea behind when you're working on a project, a licensed project, is that you need to learn to be an expert on that project while you're working on it. And it's something that not everyone does.
Right. Right.
And it's why you get these whether it's a DVD or a comic or a book or something, and they screw around with canon and they become kind of like questionable. And it takes some of the fun out of it. If you can tell by watching or reading something that the person isn't a real fan.
Yes.
It shows. Oh, it man. Shows, you know. And so when we were working on these, we wanted it to be unquestionably from the fans for the fans.
That was one thing. And so this is so funny because we were talking briefly before we got you to sit down with us. Mm-hmm. And you had said that the first collection, the first initial 10 episodes.
Yeah, the best of.
Yeah.
Right.
Was what I remember seeing first. And,
right.
And this is my rough dad lot. My trying to remember time goes so fast now. Was that about 10, 12 years ago when that first 10 episode?
Yeah, I think it was about 12 years ago, maybe
okay.
15 even.
Okay, I remember seeing that in the store.
Right.
And I instantly grabbed it. I didn't even, right. like, it was one of those weird things that my brain's like, you don't even think about it, like, should I buy it? I'm like, I need He-Man, because at that point we were in that weird pocket where there was nothing.
Right.
You know? And so I just grabbed it, because the series wasn't on DVD.
Well, and the company didn't know what it was going to do.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get at.
They were very concerned about putting too many eggs in one basket. So when we designed it, you know, there was basically 16 documentaries that I ended up doing for He-Man, 8 hours of He-Man documentaries. But when we designed it as if, okay, we are going to release all of these, and we are going to release all the She-Ras eventually and things like that. But just in case this is the only He-Man release,
right.
we need to make this the coolest one. So that's why we ended up going with the best of.
Ugh.
And why there's so much stuff crammed
there's
into
so
that.
So much content right. in that pack, man.
Yeah,
and there's like prints. There's like art that comes out and falls out of it when you open it.
Yeah, yeah. It was something where we were like, we have to make this both standalone and clear that if we went further, that there would be more to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, so the postcard prints, art prints, were something, they were numbered.
Yeah.
You know, so you knew it was one of 16. Well, mm-hmm. what does that mean? Are we going to see the other, you know, the other 14 of them?
Yep.
And we kind of made that really clear with the fans, like, if this succeeds, we're going to do more.
Yeah.
And it was one of the best-selling titles for that year for animation.
I can imagine. What was crazy was, and it's funny you mentioned that, like, I got that 10 episode pack, and then what, 2-3 years later, I started seeing the other packs come out with the seasons.
Right.
And then there was this beautiful one that had, like, it was like a gray skull. It was the entire series.
Right.
Were you involved with that one as well?
That was actually done by the people who, PCI Eclipse eventually went out of business.
Oh, okay.
And so all the original sets are out of print.
Oh.
That's why they're so expensive now.
No, I see.
The box set that has Castle Grayskull is from a second company.
Okay.
And it was my bosses at BCI Eclipse went from BCI to a company called Mill Creek. And Mill Creek put out that. When they did that full set, because it was kind of compressed, that there wasn't as many discs as if you had bought the individual sets and so forth. They had to take out most of the special features just because there just wasn't room on the discs for it. If they had, if it had been Blu-ray, they could have fit everything.
They could have done it.
But for DVDs, to keep the number of discs down, they had to like basically take out most of the special features.
Ah.
So if you have the opportunity, or you go on eBay or something and get them, if you have the opportunity to get the original sets, that's where you're going to get the most content. Because we included storyboards, and we included scripts, and we included, there's commentary tracks and the documentaries and the art cards and so forth. And then if you line all of them up, if you line up all the He-Mans, and then when we did She-Ra's, we continued it. If you line them up, the spines of them all formed a big panoramic view of Eternia and
Snake Mountain
and Snake Mountain and Bright Moon, and you know, I mean, everything else. It was all just like this huge panorama.
We need that,
and it was all taken from the actual backdrops from the animation.
My gosh. How fun to be part of that. I imagine you were just having an absolute time.
Yeah. And that was when I got to meet and get to know Lou Scheimer really well, who was the head of Filmation Studios. And Lou was not just one of the sweetest guys I've ever met in Hollywood, but also one of the most connected. He knew everybody and everything and had been a part of so many things. And so, you know, when I wasn't interviewing, I was sitting around listening to him, because you didn't necessarily talk to him, you listened to him, you know, because he was just story after story after story. And, you know, there was one point where he was telling me about his dad punching out Hitler.
Oh
my goodness.
What? And his dad was Captain America.
Yeah, basically. And it was, you know, it's like, what? You know, this is my reaction. It was like, what? And it was before Hitler had risen to power, and he was speaking at a beer hall on his way up, and Lou's dad, you know, got up on stage and punched him out.
He was punching Nazis back before it was like a before hashtag.
Before there was Nazis, right. And it was funny because to him it was like such not a big, it was like what his dad had done.
Right.
You know, it wasn't a big deal. And I was like, you are literally the only person on earth whose father punched out Hitler.
That's amazing.
like there's nobody else who has this story, Lou.
No,
you're the person.
He has like a plaster cast of his dad's like clenched fist.
So
that's
the
fist that punched out Hitler, guys.
After interviewing him for years for all these various DVD sets, I said, you know, let's do a book about your life and about Filmation, about its history. And that ended up being the book which both of you now own, which is called Lou Scheimer, Creating the Filmation Generation.
Dude, Filmation. Sorry.
Yeah, it's like putting that book together. As much as I know about animation history and as much as I knew about these shows, was really an eye-opener, because it taught me not only about Filmation's history, but also, from Lou's perspective, having been there from the very start of Saturday morning animation,
right?
How did that develop, and how did standards and practices work, and how did the networks choose things, and why did they, you know, I mean, like with Motu, that was the first syndicated Monday through Friday show ever. And how did that happen, and how did that come about business-wise, not just creatively, but business-wise?
Well, and the first one where the toy kind of was before the cartoon.
Yeah, there were so many things that Filmation really looked ahead to.
Yeah.
They were an interesting company in that they both looked behind. They looked at the movie serials, and they looked at the radio shows and things that worked, and they emulated aspects of those.
Yeah.
While at the same time in animation, they were the first company in the Flash Gordon cartoon series, they were the first company to use CGI.
I didn't realize that.
It was in the super earliest days of using computers at all, and they actually used CGI in Flash Gordon. And that was, you know, in 78.
Yeah.
It didn't come out until 80, 81.
I didn't know that.
But, you know, and then foreseeing the syndication market and what that was going to be and what that was going to mean. And, you know, without He-Man, you wouldn't have had all these other shows. You wouldn't have had Transformers. You wouldn't have had, you know, all these shows, G.I. Joe. And all these shows that came since.
Yep.
And the animation market and Cartoon Network and all those things, they might exist today, but they wouldn't have existed if somebody hadn't kind of been the impetus towards, we can make this more of the backbone of the industry as opposed to just this annoying little sideline that's only Saturday mornings.
Right.
Yeah, take those hits for them so they can see that, oh, there's a market for this.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, the amazing thing was, is everyone thought they were going to take hits, and instead it became this multi-million dollar thing.
Yeah.
And it was the combination of, I don't think that the toys would have been as successful without the cartoon show.
Correct.
Nor would the cartoon show have been as successful without the toys.
Yes. Yeah. They definitely fed off each other.
It wasn't like Star Wars where, you know, the movie came out and was a hit and then the toys were a hit.
Right.
This was something that, because they came out roughly the same time period, and I mean, partially because of Star Wars, kids were conditioned now to like get the action figures of the characters that they liked watching and have their own adventures.
Yep.
And that was something that really Star Wars was a breakthrough on. So as far as television was concerned, MOTU was the one that really broke through in that play value of kids' toys and the watch these adventures. And because you could watch a new adventure every day when you came home from school, and I know you guys did, you rushed home from
totally.
School.
Oh, totally.
Dude.
Totally.
Every time I ran, I would still miss like the first like few minutes. I'd always be, but I still, yeah.
I kicked my brother.
Sprint home to get
this. That's right. Get the mac and cheese away from me. It's time to watch TV.
Yeah, no, we got out of school at 3, and then I'd get home, and it was already had started, but yep.
It's, well, luckily, the first minute and a half was just
the intro.
Yeah. The intro. Exactly.
That's kind of a and it's funny thing. As, you know, Jeff and I were talking when we started this podcast, actually. It was funny how, as we started sharing memories of some of the stuff that we grew up with, how much of it was Filmation. Mm-hmm. And it made us both, and then some of our other creator friends realize, like, well, probably one of my top three favorite studios.
Right. Oh, you know, totally. Right?
Well, like Black Without Star Filmation.
Yes.
Star Trek, the cartoon, Filmation.
Right, right. It's amazing to me, if you look at television animation history, everybody concentrates on Warner Brothers, and everybody concentrates on Hanna-Barbera.
I was going to say, yeah.
And they really dog Filmation a lot for reused animation and things like that. But there were reasons that stuff was done. It was both a cost-saving measure and... it was psychologically something that kids like to see. Kids like to see repetitive motion.
Right.
They like to see things that they could emulate. And it was psychologically, it was something that was
I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, you can count on
That's
it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Seeing how He-Man kind of ran, that running kind of montage of him like, right. And it was kind of reused, you could tell. But as a kid, you're like, that's the He-Man run.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
could probably do it now.
And here, really, watch. like you look at fans today, and that type of thing is done consistently with certain types of shows. Wonder Woman spinning, you know, is something that, like, yes, it might be a different spin every episode, but it's still that transformation, which He-Man did every episode. That transformation scene was really important for viewers.
That Voltron sequence when all the lions sync up.
Power Rangers.
And so it functioned as both a cost-saving measure because they could reuse that footage and thus save money and spend it in other aspects of doing the show.
Yeah.
And it functioned in a psychological way for the viewer for them to be connected to the character or the action.
Yeah, here comes that part, guys. Here comes it. Here it comes. Look.
Here it comes.
Right.
Get ready. Get ready.
And how many kids, you know, I mean, like for me, growing up, it was Wonder Woman, and I would spin around.
Nice.
And I would run in slow motion, make the bionic $16 man.
Yeah,
sounds.
And,
you know, and I would jump and go,
yes.
And, you know, so that was the thing that, pardon me, that was the thing that I identified with a lot as a kid. But your generation, you know, with the He-Man and G.I. Joe and things like that, you would identify with some of those other things. And it wasn't a scene that just went by every now and then.
Right.
Or, you know, some choice bit of dialogue.
Right.
It was the stuff that you saw over and
every
over
time.
Again that you could then pretend to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that was a big aspect. The other thing, Filmation got a lot of grief for limited animation, as people called it. But if you look at the anatomy that they did there, they did rotoscoping.
Yep.
So they filmed live action actors, and in fact, there's a photo of the live action actors
in the book. It's so cool.
Yep.
That's He-Man, Teela, and Skeletor. The actors who portray them, they filmed them, and then they would trace over that to get the running, walking, fighting cycles so that they looked the best they could look. If they were going to reuse it, it was going to look great.
Really good, yeah.
And, you know, so the limited animation thing I always thought was a really unfortunate thing that they got kind of attacked for.
Yeah.
Because I would look at the Hanna-Barbera stuff, and Hanna-Barbera had this trick where ever all their characters wore bow ties.
Oh, yeah.
Where they had something around their neck. And the reason was because then they could just not animate anything except for the head.
Yep. And that was their trick.
They could just attach things at the neck. And so they would have characters that wouldn't move at all except for their heads.
Yeah, I can think of that right now.
And, right, yeah.
And yet nobody said, well, Hanna-Barbera had reused their animation all the time. Nobody said, well, Scooby-Doo is, they're running down the same hallway.
Exactly.
Constantly, over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, look at how much better Scooby-Doo is than Filmation.
Which, yeah, that Isn't was that exactly crazy? The same
yep.
thing.
Yep.
You know, and you brought up Black Star. That's a perfect example of a show that looked phenomenal.
Yes. Yes.
Phenomenal. And was really, you know, almost a precursor to like Game of Thrones and some of the fantasy shows that we've seen now. But people will be like, oh, yeah, reused animation, whatever.
It's so funny, though, because you think about movies like Fire and Ice, you know, talking about the Frank Frazetta.
Yeah, the Frazetta one.
And then also there was the Lord of the Rings animated.
Do I know what you're talking about? Come on.
I'm sorry. It's not even as the.
Do I need to call you out again?
No. I'm conditioned. And then there was also the Lord of the Rings animated movie. That was rotoscoped, too. And those things are regarded as, like, well done.
Right.
It's like, oh, well, it's Rankin Bass.
Right.
And also, I forget the studio for Fire and Ice. I know Frazetta was involved.
Nelvana.
But it's like those are regarded as, like, they're well regarded. And then here's Filmation doing the exact same practices. And it's like,
right. Yeah, Brave Star was a lot of that was rotoscoped as well.
I love
you know,
Brave
and
Star.
Tarzan, yes. You look at the Tarzan cartoons and they're you know, the anatomy on it is absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Because they were using, you know, actors and then they would use that for reference. They didn't necessarily trace right over the stuff, but they would use it for reference to see how things worked.
Moved and shifted and all that stuff. Man, how fun. Oh, my gosh. So real quick about yourself, we should probably, like, start to wrap this up.
Be respectful of your time here.
But, like, how can people get a hold of you if they want to, like, follow your career, you know, just kind of work back and see what you've done and
the
book even? How would they get a hold of you?
My website is andymangels.com, which is andymangels.com. And it's like Mangles with that's angels with an M.
Oh, nice!
It's not like an angle; it's an angel.
Oh. There you go.
There you go. That's perfect.
And so you can find all the information about my career is all there. Everything I've worked on is all listed there, and there's links, you know, to Amazon or to the publishers. The Lou Scheimer book itself, is available at pretty much any comic book store can order it. Although a lot of them don't keep it in stock.
Sure.
But they can get it, any comic book store can get it within a week.
Nice.
Oh, okay.
So if you go into your comic store one Wednesday and ask for it, the next Wednesday they can
You'll have it.
You can also get it at most major bookstores like Borders.
Yep.
Amazon carries it regularly. I know that because I get royalty statements and they show me how many Amazon sales there are.
Nice.
If you buy it directly from the publisher, which is Tomorrow's, T-W-O Morrow's, they will send you not only the book, but they'll also send you a color PDF of the book.
That's amazing. Sweet.
And because the book was laid out in full color, but then when it was published, most of it was black and white.
Yeah.
There was only a little bit of color.
Yeah. Keep those costs down a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
But
no reused animation in the book, though.
No reused. The book is substantial, too.
Yes.
It's a thick book, and there is so much great stuff in it.
It weighs almost 2 pounds.
It's incredible.
Great behind the scenes. I mean, I was just kind of thumbing through it yesterday, and it's just so great.
Right.
I want to encourage people to try to get it from you from conventions, though, because you gift the purchaser with a unique little.
I do. I
send off.
You know, a lot of people know me for my writing career.
Yeah.
And I actually have a graphic design degree.
Yeah.
I started out wanting to draw comics, and then at the end of college, I was like, I just don't like doing art on demand.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I never pursued doing art except for when I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And so one of the fun things that I've been doing is if you buy my Filmation book, I'll draw Filmation characters. You guys got a little extra because each of you got 2 characters.
Yeah. Well,
so who did you get? You got?
I got Manny Faces and Fisto from He-Man.
Right.
Yep.
And then I got Buzz Off and Moss Man.
Right. Which you haven't gotten
yet. I haven't gotten
yet. You're getting
it. He's still working on it.
Yeah. So, it's fun to do because it lets me kind of put a little bit more of me in there.
Yep.
It also personalizes it more than just a signature.
Yes, it's an art piece now. Yes. It's a conversation. Yeah. Oh, dude, yeah. I love it. I was just staring at it like a kid yesterday. He drew that for me, and it looks so good, too. Yeah. And it's a little joke. You got a joke. Right. And you work your humor into it, too, right. Which is so funny.
Yeah, so right. Billy from...
Oh, Billy, yeah, one of our
he also co-hosts. He also got a book.
He got a book, and you drew in it the Filmation Ghostbusters gorilla.
Right.
Along with Slimer, which
being
is
slime by Slimer.
Slime, yeah. And yeah. He has a thing saying ready to fling poo in 3, 2. It was so good. Wonderful. It was so funny.
Oh. I couldn't think of anything because he doesn't, you know, the gorilla doesn't talk.
Yeah, no, it was perfect.
It's Tracy. Tracy doesn't talk, and Slimer just kind of makes
the look on his face was perfect.
Goo-goo sounds, you know?
That's right.
It was so fun. Well, Andy, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah,
taking
no
the time. We appreciate it. And like everybody, look him up. Are you on Twitter?
Well, sort of. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if I post on Facebook, it also posts on Twitter.
Okay.
But gotcha. I don't really do a lot on
That's
Twitter.
Fine. Sure. You know how sure. People like to follow stuff. But
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, but be sure to look him up online. And order that book, people. What are you That's doing? Right. It's so Absolutely. Fun.
That's it. Thank you.
Oh, man.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you again, sir.
Mega.